Yes, I should write that. Should I write that?
Okay, so we're going to talk today about the development of Moshe and the appointment of Moshe as a leader. And it's so interesting to note the idea of reluctant leadership, because we live in a time where everybody wants to be a leader, but nobody is qualified. And Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that if you know, the people that are most qualified to lead don't want it, because they know what's involved, and they know what the problems are, and they know what the pitfalls are. And it's really a very difficult quandary, this idea of leadership. People need leaders, but at the same time that they want leaders, they hate their leaders. It's really true that there's an element of antagonism for someone who has control over you. On the one hand, you look to them for leadership, but on the other hand, something about it makes you uncomfortable. And being a leader really puts you in the middle. I mean, we'll speak about this. We spoke about this at length in Bamidbar also, and in Devarim, about the situations, the quandaries that Moshe is really put into. But I think a lot of this begins in the book of Shemos, in Sefer Shemos and Parsha Shemos, when the Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe and tells him that I want you to lead the Bnei Israel. And what does Moshe basically say?
No way.
I'm not the man. And so what I want to do today is maybe go through the conversation and see if we can come out with some important lessons about this, about that. So let's look at first on page 300, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Page 300, Aviva. Vayhi bayamim harabim ha'hem. There were those great many days. Vayamas melech Mitzrayim. Right? And the king of Egypt died. Vayanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avoda vayizaku. Vayanchu means they sighed. Meaning, what does it mean that when you're already sighing from the work? When you sigh from it. Meaning, first when somebody oppresses you, what's the first thing you do? You rebel, you protest. No, that's not the first thing you do. When do you start sighing about it?
Oh, when it's useless. When you've already done it.
There's nothing else to do. You sigh about it when it's a done deal. It's a fait accompli. There's nothing more you can do about it. So they sigh. Vayivatal shavasan elo ki min ha'avoda. And their outcry because of the work went up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayishba Elohim es na'akasam. Hashem heard their complaint, their moaning. Vayizkor Elohim es briso es Avraham es Yitzchak es Yaakov. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered their covenant with Avraham, with Yitzchak, and with Yaakov. Why does it mention Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov here? What does it sound like? HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu remember Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov now? Here.
They couldn't have forgotten so fast.
Couldn't they?
I guess so.
Yeah. What does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov?
Because
Am Yisrael forgot them. Close, right. It implies, why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu save them for their own sake? Here with the Bnei Yisrael, God's holy people.
He has Chus.
Why do we need Chus Avos?
Because
we don't have Chus Avos on our own. Right. Why do you think every time we mention Shemona Esrei, we say Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov? Why? Because without Abraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't want to do so much for us. Who are you? What have you done for me lately? And look at the Jewish people in a global sense, and you see it's not necessarily such an easy thing. And then the Torah says, oh, by the way, you said, did they forget Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Did the Jewish people remember Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov?
Well, if you're saying that from here, and it happened that they're already growing, it means that they forgot, like you just said, that if they're already growing, it means that the rebellion part, the rebellion part where they remembered who they were and when they were trying to prosper the way they were when Yaakov was alive and when Yosef was alive,
right?
Then if we're already past that stage, memory is very short. If they're working, you forget all the good times.
How long were they working for?
100 years.
Probably hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, a good long time. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is the first time, it's interesting. Up till now, it says, what do they cry out to God? It doesn't even say they cry out to God. It says, Vayizaku.
They just cry out.
They cry out. Which means, I mean, the Midrash says this in a very real way. The Midrash says that the Bnei Yisrael were on the 48th level of Tumah. Mm-hmm. What does that mean in classical terms?
That's
Not the slave mentality. It'd be pagan mentality. Mm-hmm. They had lost almost every semblance of a Jewish identity that they could have. And we're all familiar with the Midrash, right? Lo shinu es shemam, es lashonam v'es malbusham. They didn't change their names. Lashonam, their tongues, and malbusham, their dress. What else did that tell you? They changed
converted.
Right, they changed everything else. Right? They were only Jewish by identity. What about religion? What about worship? What about culture? What about ethics?
Nothing.
Entirely Egyptian, as much as Egyptians would let them. Slave. So when they cry out, it's almost as if, sadly enough, they don't know to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. They would just cry out.
Why don't you cry out to God? What God? They never heard of such a God. Right. You know? It's almost scary how history repeats itself in such a way. You know, like the Jews, they began history by not knowing which God to cry out to. And we're right back there. You know, to cry out to God. You can't even cry out to God. Nobody knows who to cry out to anymore. Okay. Pasuk Chafhei. Vayar Elohim es b'nei Yisrael, vayeda Elohim. God saw the children of Israel, vayeda Elohim, and God knew. What's the problem with this pasuk? What did he know? Well, even more than that, what does God know? Everything. So therefore, what does it mean? Meaning, what do you mean God knew? What did he know now that he didn't know beforehand?
He knew it was time to do something for them, mm-hmm. in remembering their forefathers.
That's what Vayed Elohim means? Mm-hmm. Okay. Says Ramban. Ramban says a very interesting passage. Where am I? We're in the first paragraph. Okay. Vayed Elohim, Ramban says... Hold on a second, let me just find my place. V'nachon al derech ha-pshat. Let me explain to you the pshat. Ki b'tchila haya maskir panav nehem. V'haya le'echol. Originally, God employed what we call hester panim. What is hester panim? What's that?
To stay.
Hester panim means God hid his face.
Hiding.
Right. It isn't that God, you ask, how could God not know about their suffering? In a sense, God didn't look. God allowed history to sort of take its own way. Okay? V'ata now shema Elohim nakasam v'ra'a osam. And now God heard their cry and he saw them, lomar, to tell you, shelo hisir panav od mehem, that God wasn't hiding his face anymore. V'yada et machovam v'chol asher na'aseh lehem v'et kol hasarich lehem. And God now knew their pain, he knew what was done to them, and he knew what had to be done. So now you'll ask the next question. I don't have an answer. What's the next question?
Why does it take him so long to see?
Right. Why does God hide it? Well, why does God hide his face in the first place? That is the question we don't have the answer to. That's the question of faith. Right, we don't have the answer to that question. I don't know. But for whatever reason, God judged that this was not a time for him to involve himself. God had to remove himself from the situation because for whatever reason, we act in a certain way. I could give you any number of reasons. You know, look at the behavior of the Jewish people. Right? What brought them into slavery? It wasn't just that the Egyptians overpowered them. I'm sure they had also degraded themselves and began to integrate themselves. So it becomes a slippery slope. So in any case, God now decides it's time to save them. Time to bring back. Time to return the Jewish people. Time to get them out of here. How's the paradigm? So how do you do that? The first thing you need to do is?
Find a leader.
Okay. Moshe. Back to Moshe. Moshe Haya, did I ever, by the way, discuss who Moshe was and his upbringing?
I think we touched on him yesterday.
Not yet, yesterday?
Last week, I
did?
Very briefly.
Does this ring a bell from anybody from last year?
Yeah.
What? No? Mrs. Barnes?
No.
Okay, very good. Then let's do that. It's very important. Before we understand this, we have to go back. Who was Moshe? We all know that Moshe doesn't want to take the job. Let's find out why. Okay. Turn back to Parag Bet, 296. Well, you are all quoting a midrash.
Yeah, that he had a speech impediment, that he's
novice. But a speech impediment is a midrash.
Oh,
By the way, everybody knows how did he get the speech impediment? Right. So everybody understands, of course, that story for sure literally happened. Except, of course, me. Okay. What? I love Midrashim. I just don't necessarily take them literally. Vayerach ish mi beis Levi, vayikach et bas Levi. This is such an interesting, fascinating literary device. Okay? What are the names of these people?
Amram
and Yocheved. Why not say Vayelech Yocheved Vayelech Amram Vayikach et Yocheved?
Why doesn't it say that?
No, there's an easy answer to that. What's that? Vayikach Amram Ben Levi et Yocheved Bat Levi. Why doesn't it say that?
Was it special?
Ish mi beis, why be vague about it? Ish mi beis Levi, vayikach et bat Levi. Some guy took some woman and they had a kid.
Well, maybe because of special
yichas of Vayelach Amram ben Levi, vayikach et yocheved bat Levi. Why are we leaving them nameless? Well, if it's... What?
Important.
No, I want you to think. I want you to think. It's not important to tell the name right now. Why not?
I don't know.
Right.
Maybe
the
Yichus wasn't big enough.
Moshe Rabbeinu Yichus wasn't big enough. Amram ben Levi?
No, maybe the father. The mother didn't come from.
The Yavazah, they're from Levi. They're from, you know, the tribe of Levi.
Yeah.
Actually, what does that mean if they're from Levi right now?
Nothing, really.
I mean, anything. Nothing right now.
Right.
Could have been in theory, correct. But why don't they have a name? I have two suggestions. One I thought of before, one I just thought of now. Anybody? Come on. No one? Mrs. Gilman, any ideas? Nothing. Who are Moshe's parents?
Moshe's parents were Amram and Yocheved.
If you would ask Moshe, who are your parents?
Oh, the daughter of Pharaoh.
No.
The house of Pharaoh. No. That's where he grew up.
Okay, if you would ask Moshe, who are your parents? He would say Hashem? Moshe would say God? I'm sorry, Amram and Yocheved wouldn't say God. Remember, what have we learned about Bnei Yisrael? And this might be blasphemous, they forgot him. Right? They had totally abandoned this whole godliness thing.
Well,
so now, again, if you would ask Moshe, who are your parents?
I'm a very important family. Lady.
What would he have said?
I don't know.
The way it's written here. That's
if you would have asked Moshe.
Amram and Yocheved.
He would have said, my parents are Amram and Yocheved?
No, he would have said, I don't know who my parents are.
What do you mean he doesn't know?
I don't know. Because he was fished out of the water. All he knows is some story that the daughter of Pharaoh took me out of the water.
He would say, I don't have any parents.
No.
What would he say? What would he say? I don't know who my parents are.
Why would he say I'm the daughter of Pharaoh?
He's not the son of Pharaoh.
The son of the daughter of Pharaoh.
Is he?
No, that isn't related.
Well, okay, we live in this romantic Dr. Laura idea, you know, that adoptive parents become the real parents. That's really very nice. But then we're going to see if that's true. We're going to see if that's factually true.
But wasn't he treated when he was in Egypt? Wasn't he treated as the son of Pharaoh? He was treated as royalty?
Except by?
Let's see.
So I submit to you one of a few things. The thing that I used to think was, one possibility is, the reason why it doesn't name them is because their names aren't important now and they would overshadow the development of Moshe. Moshe is his own individual, irrespective of his parents. But I think even more strongly, they're not named now because they're not to him his parents. He's born into a world without a family.
But he remembered who he was.
What?
He remembered who he was.
What do you mean he remembered who he was? Why? Let's see why. Good. Good. Well, let's see. Batara Isa Batela Ben. The woman became pregnant. She had a son. Batera Oto Kitovu. She thought that he was good. By the way, there are numerous midrashim about the birth of Moshe. And a very interesting midrashim about his light. His face shone, and he was born early, and she hid him in the... What?
In the bull rushes.
In the bull rushes. That's not a word we use very often today. Bull rushes. What are bull rushes?
Reeds.
In the reeds. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And that he was born early, miraculously 3 months early, and she had 3 months to raise him. Okay.
He shouldn't cry so much.
Do with it what you will. Good.
What?
Good. No, I mean, the midrashim are there, but it's all these midrashim are there to show you that the hand of God played a very strong role in the rate, in the birth and development of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay.
You don't have to take them literally in order to understand to see God's hand in Moshe's development and who he is. That's clear. It's very, anybody ever see that they made this cartoon movie called Prince of Egypt? Anybody ever see this movie?
Yes.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in the opening credits, they show the mother putting the baby on the Nile. And just about like a zillion different things that almost, you know, drown this poor baby in this like little thing. What?
All these natural,
you know what I'm saying? Like, all these natural catastrophes that should have happened to this baby that don't happen. I happen to like that sequence very much. Because it really, it reflects this idea. That here you have, I mean, just think about it. What is the Nile? The Nile isn't like, you know, the river that we go canoeing on, the like, little dinky river. The Nile is a major river with tributaries, and it's dangerous, and you put something on the Nile, what happens to it usually? Yes, yeah, goodbye, people, see you later. It's not going to, you know, some dinky little raft she built. Very good, very nice. She made a little float for him. So do you see the Yad Hashem, the hand of God in Moses' development? And if you do, then you have to ask yourself, why was he developed that way? If the hand of God was that this is going to be the leader of the Jewish people, why was he developed that way? Why was he bred that way? We'll see in a second. Batari Shabatele Ben Vakera Soki Tofu. He's good. Nice kid. Wonderful kid. Batit Spinehu Shmo Sayirachim. She hid him for 3 months. So the Midrash says she hid him for 3 months because, well, how could you get away with having for 3 months? Because he was born early. They were expecting to birth. She didn't have 3 months.
And they didn't have to cry that loud.
What?
He didn't cry that loud.
What's a simple understanding? There's a little baby. A little baby you can hide. As soon as they get older, they get bigger, it becomes much harder to conceal. V'lo yachla od hatspino. She couldn't conceal him anymore. V'atikach lo tevat gomeh. She took a wicker basket. V'atachmera b'chemer u'bezafet. She smeared it with clay and pitch. I don't think we often, you know, focus on this enough. Can you imagine? I mean, think about just the... What did the mother... What was the mother really doing?
She's putting him out.
And therefore what?
Doing his death.
Why does she...
I think you're looking at it a different way than I was.
She didn't know for sure if he was going to be saved.
What did she think would happen?
That's because I didn't
drown. Oh, well, she thought he would.
Yeah.
Right.
But she thought that would be maybe a merciful
correct
way to go.
Right. Right. It's better that the Nile gets you.
Than killed right away.
I do what I have to do.
Right.
That is
how many other kids do you think were saved by the daughter of Cairo?
None.
Hard to say. None, probably none.
We don't hear.
Right, you don't, well, I mean, because this is the story of Moshe.
Maybe they weren't.
But can you imagine how desperate these women must have been about their sons? That here you have a mother, and it's not considered remarkable. She's taking her newborn 30-month-old child, placing him in a basket, and setting him off. Interesting.
Maybe she had enough
money
that Hashem
said. What Hashem?
I wonder, that's an interesting question. Did other women try to do the same thing?
How I don't know. What did the other women do?
That it wasn't so that it was not, like I say, remarkable. Maybe she just copied what other people did?
Hard to say. Hard to say. It's impossible to know.
Yeah.
You know, but where would you get the idea, I'm going to put him on the Nile? Mm-hmm. I'm going to sort of float him up and see what happens. It's just very strange. So his sister stood from afar to see what would happen to him. So the daughter of Paro went to bathe on the Yor, on the Nile. And her maidservants were with her. Vatishlach et amata latikacheha. She sent out her maidservants and she brought in this basket, this ark, this raft. So I think it must be unusual, because if it had happened all the time,
you
probably would not have paid attention. Vatiftach, she opens it up. What could it be? I mean, it must have been unusual. Vatirehu et hayeled behinei nar boche. She opens it up. What's inside? Lo and behold, like you think you're going to find some treasure floating down the Nile, and what do you find?
A baby.
Vatachmol alav. It's very interesting. You can, you know, when you could be the arbiter of unbelievable cruelty, but when it strikes you and when it hits you in the face, you know, when you have a picture, when you see an image, it encourages compassion. Like, you think the daughter of Pharaoh wasn't in favor of the slavery of the Jewish people? This is what we have to do for the best of Egypt. You know, what can you do? If you make yourself dispassionate, if you remove yourself from the situation, no people suffer. But what are you supposed to do? This is in the best interest of our country, of the good people of Egypt. Except when you open the ark.
See the baby.
And you see the baby. And then it really brings it home. And it really, I think it strongly shows just how powerful images are in our day and age. You know, television especially is an unbelievably powerful medium. And you should never, never discount how powerful it is. And I think that's something, sometimes, that's something that people in the Jewish community do. They discount it. It's so, so forceful and so, so powerful. And people believe what they see. That is the bottom line. People believe what they see. You know, there's a reason, I say this often, there's a reason why companies spend billions and billions of dollars investing in advertising. There's only one reason. It works. You don't have to be the best president of the United States. You just have to look like it. Because people believe what they see. Vast majority of people. This image is very, very striking. You know, it's so interesting. I was reading, somebody gave me a book about humor and speaking. So when Ronald Reagan was running for office the second time, one of the big issues in his campaign, one of the issues they were afraid of, was his age. If you recall, his age.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan, I think, was 76 or 77 when he ran for the second time.
Yeah, he was the oldest president.
He was the oldest president. And they thought they were going to make an issue of his age. Especially, they said, after the first debate with Mondale, he didn't do very well. He looked tired. So they said to him, they asked him at the next press conference, it was the next debate, the first thing they asked him was, Mr. Reagan, people are concerned about your age, and can you still do the job? Can you respond? So he said, I'm glad you brought that up, because I got to tell you, I feel very strongly that we shouldn't use age as a factor in this election campaign, and I'm certainly not going to use it, and I don't want you making fun of my competitor for being too young. And with that, the whole issue was over, and he went on a landslide. Just like that. If you get the right word, the right line, and people catch on to it, you could diffuse the situation just like that. Which that's what happened. You know, very clever. You know, people are very susceptible. Okay. By Tomer, she says, how did she know it's from a Hebrew child?
Who else would put their baby in the Nile?
Right. Well, what do you say, Mrs. Roberts?
I said he saw maybe that he had a priest.
Yeah. Why would you say that?
That she said, by the way, I identify him as a Hebrew.
Right. What makes you think that he actually had one?
Because he said before, they didn't change their language.
Oh, see, that's Shemam, that Lishonam, that Malbusham.
They're like everybody else.
No, you didn't change the language.
What made you think that they had one? In fact, all the Jewish people, they had to have these milas in order for them to go ahead and have the Korban Pesach. But they didn't have these milas. So how would she know? I think you're right. Who else would kick that shit on the Nile and send it down the river? Who would commit that? Who would do such a desperate thing against their own child? Good question. Okay. Batomer Achoso El Bas Paro. So then who shows up? Right. Achoso, his sister. By the way, no names. Still no names. We know it's his sister. We know he has a sister. We know he has a father. We know he has a mother. But somebody else doesn't know. Ha'ilech v'karasi lach isha me'neket min ha'ivriyot v'seinit lach eshayalech. So I go find you a wet nurse. V'atomer lo basar olechi. Good idea. V'atevech ha'alma v'tikrat im ha'yalech. It's a good scheme. Right, so who does he call?
Mother.
I'm going to pay you to nurse your own kid. She didn't know it was her own kid. Okay? She nursed him. Pasuk Yud. Vayidal hayelen, the child grew up. Vativiehu lebas paro, vayehila levain. Okay, he was to her a child. Vatikra shemo Moshe, vatomer ki min hamayim nishisihu. She called him Moshe. Why? Okay, I have a few interesting questions. There's some of them we have an answer to, and some of them we don't. One. Right, what was Moshe's real name?
You don't know.
What?
I thought I heard he had like 70.
No, that was Yisro.
Oh.
Right. What was Moshe's original name? What did his parents call him?
Baby.
Baby? Why? Because they didn't have, he was jaundiced, they didn't have to, they couldn't do the bris yet. Don't they give a name? Somebody told me that if the baby can't have a bismillah for a long time, that they give a name. In fact, I think so. I think this happened. Sometimes you'll find that for physical reasons, the baby can't withstand a surgery or needs a surgery or something like that. And they'll give the baby the name irrespective of the bris milah.
We called my cousin Mashmo for a while.
What?
We called him Mashmo.
Mashmo?
Mashmo.
Oh, Mashmo.
Mashmo.
Oh,
Mashmo. Mahashenshalo. We didn't know what the name was going to be.
What was Moshe's original name? Yeah, Mrs. Berg? Yeah, okay. We don't know. Do you know why we don't know? Well, I'm saying, but why wasn't it written? Why is it important that Moshe have the name that Paro gave him? That the daughter Paro gave him. What? Paro's daughter gave him. That's one. Number two, how long was Moshe weaned by his mother?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that question.
How long would you guess?
2-3 years,
not more. Okay.
Time.
What?
It's a long time.
Yeah, sure.
3?
Maybe even.
She was able to nurse him for that long?
Sure.
Yeah,
how long did Sarah nurse Yitzchak for?
Until
Yigamal, until he was weaned. Nowadays we consider that a molestation, but no. I think it was not considered unusual.
I mean, in some countries they do.
Right.
Them,
42, 43, not more than that. Yeah, we are. I don't know, it's not mentioned. Who is the first bismillah mentioned in Egypt? Who has the first bismillah that's mentioned in Egypt? What? Moshe's son. We'll get later on. Tzipora does it. Right, right. Yeah.
One of the important words here is Ha'izal, because it doesn't mean that he just grew up. It means he grew up spiritually, he had understanding.
I'm not going to say no. I just think it's okay. If he grew up, you mean he grew up before he got to, but he's still a boy. By Yigal, he's still a boy. And then it says, "By Yigal Moshe, by Yitzei El Echa." Okay. I don't know. It's hard to know how old he was and how long he was there for. Let me ask another question. Did his mother tell him the truth? I don't know. Well, he speaks, they all spoke Egyptian. Did his mother tell him the truth? Could he? Would you?
Yes.
You would never. You would never. Yes. What do you think? Would you tell your son the truth? No, he didn't know he had a brother. So how did he know? So you answer your question. Great question. How did he know that he was a Hebrew? Beforehand he knew. He knows right away. Well, you think that she told him and swore him to silence? How old would your child have to be for you to swear him to silence? I got a 4-year-old. And I think if I swore him to silence, it would last about 30 seconds. Ema, did you hear what Abba just told me? What's he supposed to know? How old would you be before you would swear your son to silence and you would be confident he wouldn't tell anyone? I would say 18. At least today. You can't extrapolate to then, but at least today. Why? Because teenagers are unbelievably impetuous. And in a flash of rage over some perceived injustice because he didn't get a Slurpee or something, he would blurt out, "You're not my real mother anyway." What? Correct, but at least when you become an adult, you have the ability to control yourself, hopefully.
So when does he find out?
I don't know. Oh, when does he find out? He knows immediately. Who tells him? How does he know immediately that he's a Hebrew? Well, first of all, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to know that an Egyptian would never hire an Ivri, a Hebrew, to be a wet nurse for an Egyptian. If they're slaves, how do people, when you have slaves, the only way you can own a slave is if you look at your slave as what?
Property.
Somewhat less than human. Because if they're not someone less than human, you could never live with yourself for owning a slave. Give me an example. I was listening to my Ben Franklin book. Do you know that when they were creating the United States of America, it was a matter of great, great debate the level that each slave would be allowed to vote. And the slave himself wouldn't vote, but how much would a slave count as part of the population to vote? For voting. Meaning, let's say, for example, in New England, it was part of the Constitution. In New England, for example, they didn't have slaves. So let's say probably Massachusetts, there weren't very many slaves at all. So the population was, 500,000. In South Carolina, the white population might be 300,000, but the slave population was another 300,000. So who would have more control in the House of Representatives or the Senate or whatever they would create? Would New England with their 500,000 or South Carolina with their 600,000? So their solution was each slave counted from, I don't remember if it was a half or 3/4 of a vote of a person for the population study. It was half? Half. How could you count a slave as half a person? The answer is, the only way you could own a slave is if you thought a slave was only half a person. So therefore, an Egyptian would never, ever hire a Jew to serve as a witness for an Egyptian child.
Especially
think about it this way. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam, would they ever hire a Jew to be a witness for their child? Never. They'd rather the child start. Well, that's probably not true. They're very self-serving. What? Then they would do it.
What'd you say?
If there was nobody else, they would do it. Yeah.
Kill her later.
So, Moshe knows that he has memories. Let's say he's 3-4 years old. So he knows he's growing up with the Jewish people, with the Ivrim as a slave. The most obvious one is sitting right in front of you. How does he know where he's from? When I tell you, you're going to say, oh, I don't want to tell you, I'll just figure it out. How does Moshe know that he's not an Egyptian?
Probably because he had circumcision.
Well, we discussed that. It's hard to know. It's impossible to know.
They just let him forget it.
It's impossible to know. Let's assume that he did not. Because I have no reason to believe that he did.
Was his complexion different?
I wonder, did the Hebrews look any different? Did they ever look different? The one thing we Jews are unbelievably good at is integrating ourselves into a society. Do I look any Jewish? If I would take off my yarmulke and walk around, do I look particularly Jewish? No. No, no way. Some people do, but it's really not. I mean, it's like, there's no such thing. It's ridiculous. I might look Eastern European, but no different than some Pole. Somebody from Polish descent than, Bob Slowicki from Gross Point.
But Arabs or Egyptians or Iranians have a
Right, but we look Arab, Egyptian, or Iranian. What about an Arab Jew or an Egyptian Jew, an Iranian Jew, all these Sephardic Jews? They look very Arabic. They're Jews.
Are they Ethiopian
Jews? Right. So we blend in. We very much blend in. There was also, that's the whole thing about Jews. We don't look any different. So it couldn't have been his looks. Let's assume it wasn't his bismillah. Come on, it's right in front of you. It's obvious.
So obvious you can't think of it.
It's scaring you so much. What? He kept asking for bagels. You got a bagel, some lox? Nobody? Vatikra Shemo Moshe Vatomer Kimim Hamayim Mishisihu. What is his name? His name is I Pulled You Out of the Water. You ever see that movie Dancing with Wolves? Dances with Wolves? Right? So the name, well, nowadays, what does my name mean? It doesn't mean anything. But his name is Dances with Wolves. Name is I Pulled You Out of the Water.
So he must have known that it was a
Hebrew child. Of course. It's a name. Everything about him screamed out foreigner, non-Egyptian. His whole name was. She named him in such a way that it would be impossible for anyone to ever forget that this is a child that doesn't belong.
Why did she?
It really was staring in the face, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why
okay.
did she name him that? So that he would be different from everybody else.
I don't know.
From all the other Egyptians.
By the way, Chazal speaks very, very positively about Paro, of the chesed that she had. And they say that the fact that the Torah keeps Moshe's name, meaning God should have said, by the way, your name isn't Moshe, you are the son of Jerel, you know, shoo, Superman. No, your name is really, whatever your name was. Right. Correct.
Yeah.
So what should it say? It should say your name is Yeruchim. Your name is, you know, is Mashiach, whatever your name is.
Little Pharaoh.
No. His name is Moshe. Why? Because that woman saved you and you have to have a karas hatov for what she did for you. Yeah. Very powerful. They also, by the way, tear apart the name Moshe. Because it doesn't really fit. Moshe, Mishishihu, Kimin Hamayim. Well, what's the matter, Ms. Urban?
I mean, it's just a wrong theory that you have.
Okay, let's hear it.
No, it is.
What's wrong? Tell me what's wrong.
You know, in my life, I wasn't brought up really Jewish.
Right.
I mean, Jewish, yes. My mother kept the house, milk, inflation. I knew we were Jewish. But I would never, ever have forgotten that I was Jewish. As German as I was, with all the poetry and all the philosophies and all the pros and the cons, I was 99.99 German, and maybe that little bit of a difference, Jewish.
Don't get me wrong, Ms. Strober, but what you just told me couldn't be true, because your mother kept the kosher home.
Jewish. My mother kept the kosher home.
You want to talk about 99.99% Jews, I could show you some.
Some that don't know.
Yeah, that don't Jewish. Do anything, ever, nothing, gornished. But here you're talking, you lived in a Jewish community. You might not have been Shomer Shabbos. You kept kashrus, right? Who were your friends? Were they Jewish or everybody?
Everybody. I had no Jewish friends.
The Germans didn't remind you that you were Jewish?
No. No.
Never?
No.
Interesting. All right, I would have thought he's
not. Besides that, I was once in a church. We were on a big trip from.
So why did your mother keep kosher if it wasn't so important? If it was only 0.001% of
that
you.
That is what my mother did. My mother did this.
So you had a constant reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you can't say 0.001.
It didn't
okay.
hit as such.
Right. It just was something that you were.
It
was just what it was.
How we did.
Okay.
I was in the church with 30 other classmates. And at one time they ring a bell and they go down and kneel down. In the corner of the chapel was a big picture of
our friend,
yes.
Our brother, yes.
With big eyes, and wherever you were, these eyes looked at
you. It was the Mona Yeska.
Okay, but it's a very famous picture, a very famous chapel.
Yeah?
And when the bell rang, that remains my miracle. Everybody fell down on their knees. And one person was standing up. I. Why did I stay?
I don't know. You tell me. No, she kept kosher. I don't know.
You know that you are Jewish. Moshe knew that he was Jewish. It is inborn. You don't do this intentionally. You do it because it's in your blood.
Mr. Robert, I but wish what you said was true today. I would halavai that it were that what you said was true today. But I have met Jew after Jew for whom their Yiddishkeit means absolutely nothing. It is a detail of birth and nothing more. I think that you lived in a time and in a culture where it was inherently your ethnic identity was inbred in you. And while they might not have persecuted you, you knew that you were Jewish and you knew that you were taught that a Jew doesn't kneel in a church. It was something that you instinctively knew. No one ever told you that. You never had gone to shul before?
I had been in shul, of course I had been in shul.
So then, someone who has been in shul, even on a yearly basis, knows that they don't kneel in a church. What did Moshe do? After he was raised until he was 3. Right? 3, he grew up with the Hebrews. But then from then on, he's in Egypt. You think he didn't kneel when Bat Paro kneeled, when his mother kneeled? He kneeled too. What is he supposed to do? That's his mother. That's where he's living. And when he gets to dinner and they serve him pork, what's he going to eat? Well, they don't serve pork. They didn't eat whatever. You know, what's he going to eat? Whatever they eat. Because there was nothing. There was no Jewish religion. There was no Judaism. So he knew, though, that he was born a slave. And he knew that, correct? You're talking about a richness of a religion and a tradition and a spirituality that has yet to be transmitted to the Jewish people. There's no Torah yet. Yeah, but he had never heard of these people. Why? Because the Jews never heard of these people. They forgot about them. That's what we started with. They didn't cry out to Hashem. It should have said they cried out to God and they said, God of our fathers, please save us. They don't do that. It says, Vayizaku.
They just cried.
Oh, gosh. Not even God. Oh.
Wow.
Veizmir.
The
they didn't even say, oh, they did say Veizmir. They didn't change their language. They said, Veizmir. Veizmir. What are we going to do?
It's not what
she
lazy. And they were not enslaved like the others.
Another midrash. Another midrash. Yeah. If they were not enslaved like the others, then why was his mother afraid of him being killed?
Because it was still a Hebrew boy.
Okay.
I want to know how come Paro, didn't he realize this was a Jewish town?
Yes.
So here his commandment.
Yeah, but
being violated.
Answer the question.
His daughter loved that child.
You got it. Answer the question. The question is, rules are made to be broken. And what's good for the goose is not good for the Pharaoh. Because I'm the Pharaoh, and my daughter gets what she wants.
That's right. Well, but look at Ahasuerus. If he didn't come and say, all the women, it would be a terrible thing.
And what do we say about Ahasuerus?
He was led by...
I'll say it the right way, that he was a moron.
I did get the right answer.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? What kind of leader is it? The whole one of the parodies of the whole Purim story is, here's a rule that can never be broken, not even by the king. But you're the king. If I can't break my own rule.
What do you think about you?
A cop, yeah.
What? You cut to the chase.
Yeah. I cut to the chase? Yeah, sometimes I say it like it is. So Paro's, why did she say, why did Bat Paro get away with that? But isn't it interesting that the things that we hold dear, the things that are the bedrocks of our beliefs, when it comes to us personally, when it starts to hit home, all of a sudden we begin to question.
Overlooking.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that it's a very difficult thing. You know, when it hits home, it really, that's human nature.
I still say the ballet to there's that spark, even though like you say
nothing. Oh, I believe that. I believe in that neshama. But that neshama yaseira was part of Matan Torah, that all the neshamas were there in Matan Torah. Right? That's where it really begins, at the Mount Har Sinai. When all the Jews stand around Har Sinai, the Midrash says that all the neshamas were there as well. But until that point, the Jewish people have not been imbued with that certain spirituality. The only thing they have going for them is Chus Avos, is the merit of the poor. That's all. That's it. They have yet to get it. And I know I take a very, how should I say this, a very sort of realistic look at things. I don't look at it from the Kabbalistic point of view. And I know that in the Kabbalah and the Masorah, that Moshe had already, he was great and he was born great and he was always, he was a spiritual giant even from the very beginning. That's all brought down in the Midrash, and I don't want to overlook that. But at the same time, you can't look at it without looking at the simple meaning as well. So here he is. Here's this poor kid. Who are his parents? They don't have a name. We don't know. Who's the sister? What's the sister's name?
Miriam.
Oh, we know that, but what's her name? Have you seen the name Miriam here yet?
No.
Never seen it?
I read ahead.
You read ahead. You see this? All right. Okay. He's given a name. Everybody knows who he is. He knows who he is. So imagine growing up in the house of Pharaoh as the only one, you're the only slave in Egypt who isn't enslaved.
And he's different from everybody.
Different from everybody. Excellent. Well said. Absolutely beautifully said. Mr. Him, Mr. Here. Is he Egyptian? No. Because the Egyptians always let him know, hey, it's Moshe. It's drawn from the water, man. Okay? Playing in the yard, they always let him know. What about when it comes to the Jewish people? Let's see. 298. Vayihi bayamim ha'hem. And was in those days. Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grew up. Vayitzei alachav vayar b'sivlosam. He went out to his brothers and he saw their suffering. Okay, and so immediately we see, interestingly enough, Moshe knows. He understands that he's a Hebrew. He's an Hebrew. He's a different person. And so you can imagine. Can you imagine a boy growing up like this? You know, 10, 15, 18, let's say 20. So how would you feel if you were growing up in this environment? You are a Hebrew. You're growing up in the house of Paro. How would you feel going up every day and seeing who makes your bed?
Servants.
Right. Who? What kind of servant?
The Egyptian. I mean, it's
a Hebrew, right. Who makes the bread? Who cooks? Well, I don't know. Maybe because the Paro was different. But, you know, there are slaves all over the place. And they're all like you. And they're all slaves, except for you. So how do you feel?
A little uncertain. There, but for the grace of Hashem, go on.
Wow.
Any moment, if somebody turns against me, I could be in that position.
No, you couldn't.
He's
I'm the father's adopted son. He's fine. He's fine. He's in a position of privilege and honor. You have to remember that there's no democracy. Yeah. This is the Pharaoh. Pharaoh just goes. There's no question.
Exactly. And what happens if he really gets on his mom's nerves and she says, you know, get out of here?
That could be. All right.
Could lose the protection.
I don't know. I mean, that seems a little far-fetched to me.
Well, after he's
born, he's a second. Again, that's a little far. Okay. How does he feel? How do you feel, though, grow, you know, every day, walking around every day? How would you feel?
I
don't ever see that movie. There was a very famous movie called Europa, Europa.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very well-known movie. It's a movie about this young Jewish boy who ultimately, they think that he's a Nazi. So he gets sent back to Germany to go to this fancy Nazi school. I think it was a true story.
Yeah.
And the pressure of being a Jew in this situation, it consumes him. Becomes all encompassing, and he almost like has to tell the secret. He has to let it out. So if it were me, I think that there's a great deal of, I mean, for me, kaviyacha, lahabzil, all these things, there has to be a great deal of guilt. Why am I different than all of those other people? I was born like them. It says, just the way it says, Vayetse el echav vayar b'sivlo sam. He went out to his brothers. He knows that they're his brothers. And he sees their suffering. And this isn't just a one-time deal. This is day after day after day. You go to school. You grow up, you know. He's probably being, to be honest with you, raised to be, what do they want with Moshe? What are they going to do with him?
He'll be a prince.
He'll be a prince, right? So what would his job be? Maybe a liaison to the Hebrew if you're one of them. You can handle it. Great, great. You know, wonderful. Vayar b'sivlosam, but he sees their suffering and
so
their oppression.
Empathizes.
He empathizes with them. So on the one hand, he empathizes with them. On the other hand, I think there has to be a great deal of guilt. And here I am living in the lap of luxury, whereas I have a family somewhere, and how do I know that because of me that family isn't being oppressed? Because of me, something I do, something I say, because of my family, because of my father, my real parents are being oppressed. So you have to see his upbringing in that way. I think that it's unavoidable. On the one hand, he's a Jew, but he's being raised in the house of power. And then you have to ask yourself, why does God want it this way? This is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously had him born, the Olam Midrashim, right? He was miraculously born 3 months early, miraculously saved on the Nile, that Paro's eyes should see him and have compassion. God wants him raised in this way. Clearly. That's right. If you're going to be a leader, you can't be a slave. Because if you're born a slave, the human condition is such. If you're born a slave and raised a slave, you can never get yourself out of that mentality of being a slave. Isn't it so interesting? What, you know, I just keep thinking about it. Like, I learned so much from this book, from this Ben Franklin book. What broke the British Empire? Well, broke it was, here were a group of people that a generation later were not born under the English crown, really. And they began to wonder to themselves, if I'm not born there, and I don't really have a voice there,
where do I belong?
Only someone with a perspective from the outside can see things in a different way and say, well, maybe we should change things. But if you're born into a situation, if you're part of that situation, you just can't see it.
Okay, you know? 40 years in the desert.
What?
There's 40 years in the desert.
There's 40 years in the desert. It explains a lot of different things. But you have to see it that way. But what's the price, though? What's the price? Who pays the price? It's necessary. Moshe has to be raised that way. He can't be one of the slaves. He has to know he's a Jew. Who pays the price? He pays the price. And now what a heavy price it is. Just think about it. What does it drive him to do? Every day he sees, he walks home, every day on his way home, there's this Egyptian that beats this Jew mercilessly. Every other Egyptian walks by, doesn't give it a second thought. Doesn't mean anything to them. It's just what it is. And Moshe, every time he hears that whip come down on this guy's back, it kills him inside. Day after day after day, he walks home day after day, and nobody notices anything, and day after day, it hurts him more and more. So one day, from Vayifen Cho Vacho, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, he looks one way and the other, nobody's looking, Vayach Es HaMitzri, Vayitmenehu Bacho. He kills the Egyptian, and he buries him in the sand. And that puts something very interesting. Vayar ki ein ish.
There's nobody around.
Right. Is there nobody around?
How could that be possible?
No. Is there nobody around?
Yeah.
Is there nobody around? Prove to me that that's not true. They know. Because everybody, all the Jews know about it. So here's the interesting paradox. Vayar ki ein ish. Is it that Moshe didn't see anyone?
No. He didn't see another Egyptian.
Right. And how is that described? He didn't see another Egyptian, and how is that described?
He didn't see another man.
No ish, no other men around. Interesting. How strong must this feeling in Moshe have been that it would drive him to murder an Egyptian? Pretty darn strong. So is it necessary that Moshe is raised this way? Absolutely. But is it painful for him?
Of course.
Unbelievably painful.
Of course.
So when Dad says to Moshe later on, hey Moshe, I've got a job for you. I want you to come back to Egypt. What's Moshe's first words?
No,
no way. Right? It's as heavy as the price as it was before. It gets even heavier later on. All right, by the way, this is just an introduction to this idea. You can follow it along through. There's much more to be said about it, but unfortunately, we're out of time. Have a good week.